This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm hoping the Big Ten has to modify their system for us.
Probably like getting grade 10 sandpaper rubbed on your face every day.
I mean, we say it all the time, whether, you know, there's two types of turds, you're a sinker or you're a floater, but you're still a turd, right? I mean,
we are about players and players playing the plays and not necessarily the plays.
Welcome to the Varsity Club Podcast. My name is Derek Peterson. Joining me this week, we're both live and in person. Well, we're not really live because you're listening to us later, but we're both in person. I haven't been in this studio for a long time. Jacob Padilla is with me. Jacob, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well.
Thank you for being here. Sasha Durkin decided to just dump my podcast, so shout out to her for doing that as a producer. But Cam Broham has picked it up, so Cam is now our producer. Shout out to Cam. Thank you for seeing the value of this podcast where Sasha did not. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Today we are going to we have Jacob here, so obviously it's going to be a basketball specific podcast. For the first roughly 37 minutes of this podcast, we're talking about the NBA and the postseason. So if the NBA is not your jam, if that's not something that you pay attention to on the regular, just skip ahead to about the 37-minute mark, and we'll get into a discussion for the last half hour or so on Nebraska basketball. So for anybody listening to this that is not subscribed, Jacob Padilla has his own podcast. It is the Nebraska Preps post-game show. He does it once a week with Damon Benning. That is a live show that you can watch on Facebook, or you can subscribe to the podcast feed. So give that hit the subscribe button, drop a comment, drop a 5-star rating or a like or whatever it is, depending on where you're listening to that podcast, where you get your podcast from. We also have a bunch of other podcasts as a proud part of the Herd App Media Network. So go get in all those. It's hailvarsity.com/network, I think, where you can find all the Hail Varsity ones. Jacob.
Derek.
The Phoenix Suns are up. We're recording this on a Wednesday, so you guys are going to see Game 3, which I believe is Thursday night, before this gets released. So as things stand currently, the Phoenix Suns are up 2-0. Possibly by the time people hear this, they'll be up 3-0 or 2-1 still. If you could go back in time to, what was it, the 2019 draft, you have the number one pick again. Do you still take DeAndre Ayton, or would you take Luka Doncic or someone else?
Yeah. That's a difficult question.
This is the peak of DeAndre Ayton's value right here. This is the nadir of DeAndre Ayton's value right here.
That's the point. And I know some people have tried to relitigate. This definitely was the right move to go with Ayton. And The flaw in that thinking, and I tweeted this the other day, is that it implies that this was the only path that the Suns had to contention, and that, or even that this was the best path. We have no idea what James Jones would have been able to do with a Luka Doncic, Devin Booker pairing, and we have no idea how those guys would have grown together and kind of what their games would look like. We've seen what Luka's become in Dallas, but
they certainly don't trade for Chris Paul.
Yeah, that is definitely true. But do they trade for somebody else? I don't know who would have been available. So it probably would have been, with the benefit of hindsight, it probably would have been a more difficult path to get here. We've seen how Dallas screwed it up with Doncic, but also we've seen James Jones make every right move somehow, even when they didn't really seem like they were the right moves at the time. And I think Jalen Smith is the only one that's questionable right now. And even that, he's got a little bit of time here to kind of figure it out. So I guess just in the benefit of hindsight and knowing how fun this ride has been and the fact that there's very real chance that it just keeps on going, just based on how all the teams look. You get Chris Paul back. I mean, I think the Suns look...
They're the favorite right now. Yeah,
I think depending on where Milwaukee might still be the betting favorite. I think I heard that yesterday, but I think you just looking at the basketball side of it, and I think the Phoenix probably has the most well-balanced team left.
How do you feel about that? You're very calm right now, very zen. I would have expected you to be a little bit more excited, but I guess that's not really kind of that's not really you. But how are you feeling right now? Phoenix is two wins away from the NBA Finals.
Yeah, it's crazy. I could, again, we had the conversation. I could see that the Suns had a chance to kind of move forward. You can see the moves they made last year, bringing in Ricky Rubio, getting some competent point guard play. You can see a couple steps forward from some of the young guys. You can see kind of this building towards getting back into the mix with the playoffs. Obviously, you add Chris Paul, that accelerates that timeline. But even before that, the 8-0 in the bubble, obviously, the bubble is kind of weird, but the way they did it and just kind of the continuity they showed, the way some like Devin Booker stepped up, some of these other guys, like you can see that they were on the correct path. And then again, you bring in Chris Paul and that just elevates what everybody was already doing to begin with. So it's all come together. And then James Jones continued to make little moves on the margins that just continues to raise the team's floor and ceiling. And whether it's campaign, start in the bubble last year, which I hated
so
that move.
Happy for him.
Yeah, I hated that move because obviously he'd been a bust at, what, four different teams? He was out of the league. It's like we couldn't find some younger guy that maybe has more upside.
He was best known for his sideline dancing. That was campaign.
that is very true. I think you look up his name and they're on the Twitter GIF search.
The Russell Westbrook video. Hit them folks of him dancing with Russ. That's the first one that pops up.
Yeah.
That's the one that he's known for. That's the one that my wife knew him from.
Oh, man.
Which should tell you the plight of campaign's career early on.
Oh, and I know Bulls fans just kind of the pain that they're seeing this run with. I feel bad for them, but I'm so happy for Cam. He legitimately might be the best story in the NBA over the last year. Like, you just consider all the factors. He was out of the league. He was in China. He was in the G League. Lottery pick who had never, didn't even really show much promise in his first year, which is why he was out of the league before his second contract. And Suns took a chance on him. He came in, and he absolutely killed it in the bubble. And we were like, well, we probably need to upgrade that backup point guard spot. We can't rely on kind of that bubble mirage for an entire season. And sure enough, not only has he picked up where he left off, he's even elevated at times when they needed him the most. So, Torrey Craig getting like cast off from Milwaukee and now playing an important role for the Suns and being really valuable within that role. Obviously, the core that has been here with Booker, Ayton, and Bridges, and now Cam Johnson as well as a younger guy as part of that. It's just incredible to watch this team come together, and yeah, to feel like every time they go out there, they should win. I even when the Suns were making their runs in the mid-2000s, when I first started becoming a fan, never had that feeling. So this is kind of new territory for me, especially I had forgotten what it was like to be a fan of a team in the playoffs because it's been a decade. And now not only to be a team in the playoffs, but to be one that, again, has a legitimate chance to go win a championship. It's incredible. So the Green Bay Packers are the only team that I root for that has ever won a championship.
Oh, I thought you were going a different direction with that.
I'm saying, like, this is new territory for me. That was a long time ago. It was, again, about a decade ago that they made that run. So, it's been pretty incredible to watch.
So I am happy for you. You guys are reaching, like, I need to mute Suns on Twitter levels right now. And Greg and I were talking about it the other day, and I was like, there is a story from not too long ago where there was a literal goat defecating in a general manager's office in the Phoenix Suns facility. That's how, like, gross this organization has been for the last few years, and the staunch supporters of the team, yourself included, have had to endure all of that. And when you have to endure all of that, S bleep, pun intended, When you're finally good again, like, yeah, you're going to puff your chest out a little bit and talk some smack. Oh,
and honestly, we could be even worse at this point just based on some of the way the Suns and Devin Booker were talked about.
Well, that's what I want to talk to you about, because you are a little bad with the Devin Booker stuff. Statistically, he had the best year of his career last year. This sort of gets back a little bit to the discussion that you and I had over Slack with Zion Williamson and Ja Morant, talking about how much can one player with statistical greatness influence winning on a team that doesn't have a ton of other winning players around them. Do you think that Devin Booker has been this same exact player over the course of his career and has been disrespected by people that haven't paid attention to him enough? Or do you think that he's continually improved, added pieces to his game each year? He's got a chance. He's got an opportunity this year, and he's seizing that opportunity. Or do you think that he's just been disrespected, and this is a player? You've watched him more than I have. So do you think he's been disrespected?
So, yes. So, like, he's 24, 25. Like, guys are going to continue to improve throughout their career. But he made the leap about 3 years ago. That's kind of when he kind of elevated himself to what he is kind of become now. And the last few years, it's been about kind of adding things in the margins, getting even better at what he was really good at. But last year, he made the superstar, or a few years ago, he made the superstar leap. And the team around him wasn't ready for it to even matter. The 70 points in a loss game, like that right there is kind of emblematic of what the Suns were and what he was within that team. It's just, it didn't matter. He was playing with Marquise Chris and Dragon Bender and Tyler Ulis and random point guard. And they ran through 20 different point guards before they finally signed Rubio.
I forgot about Tyler Ulis.
Feel bad for that guy. I mean, I liked him. He just wasn't ever able to get the ball to go in the basket.
Too small.
Well, the problem was, like,
Calipari fought so hard for him and said the size doesn't matter. He's too small.
Well, and it was that he wasn't good enough to overcome the size. Like, he could have still had a career, I think, even as small as he was, but he couldn't shoot the ball. So when you're that small, it doesn't matter how well you know how to play the game if the ball won't go in the basket when you shoot it. So that ended up being the problem there. But anyway, it's just even this year, he's continued to reshape his game. It took a while for Paul and Booker to kind of feel each other out early in the season. And the second half of the season, what they've done in the playoffs, when Chris has been able to play anyway, is just so much fun to watch. And it's so devastating for opposing defenses, because what are you supposed to do with that? You got two legitimate superstars there with guys around them that know how to play. Like, you double Booker, Mikhail's cutting to that free throw line every single time, and he's going to do something good with it now. And you've got Ayton at the rim ready to go get the ball if you miss it. He's
come a long way from the don't double me in an open gym, Devin Booker.
He's still the same dude. Like,
how do you feel about Bill Simmons after all of that?
Yeah, about the same I've felt about Bill Simmons for years.
I was listening. So Zach Lowe hadn't yet updated his podcast after the Sixers lost Game 7, and I needed to listen to someone talk about it, and it was Bill Simmons and Ryan Russillo that was, like, the most recent one.
Yeah.
So I was like, fine, fine. The first, and I was talking to Brandon about this afterwards, the first 30 minutes of the podcast is nothing but Bill Simmons apologizing to other players for writing them off, saying they were bad when they turned out to be good, making these massive assumptions or these statements that he shouldn't have made in the moment and then had to walk back later about Team X, Player Y, whatever. That's the first 30 minutes. The next 10 minutes, he says the Utah Jazz losing Game 7 to the Clippers was the worst playoff loss in the history of basketball.
Oh, no.
And I turned it off. I was like, what are we doing
Rightfully
here?
So.
What are we doing here? So, sorry, Bill Simmons side tangent. Back to Devin Booker.
Yeah.
He, through the first 3 years of his career, he was essentially 1-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio. You were talking about two or three years ago, he made that leap. Yeah. He went to 6.8 assists per game. When he started being not just the guy that is going to kill you by shooting the ball, but being the guy that's going to kill you by making the right play, yeah, he took that leap into superstardom. And the thing that was super cool to watch in game two, was it last night, is the game-winning play doesn't happen if he doesn't set that screen.
And that's totally him.
And I don't know. I was thinking about it. It's not. So, like, he didn't knock Zubats over. Yeah. But he dislodged Zubats enough to where it freed Ayton up. And it's not like, I mean, Zubats is a lot bigger than Devin Booker. So even though he didn't move him a ton, Booker, like, threw his body into him. It wasn't just like, I'm going to stand here and make it inconvenient for you. It was like, no, you're going to feel me being here, and you're going to have to move around me. And I was thinking about it. I don't know how many other players in the NBA, superstar players in the NBA, make that play. I don't think LeBron makes that play right now.
And he does with a swollen, possibly broken nose. Yeah,
like, his nose is all busted up. He's like, here's my face.
Devin Booker screening is a huge part of their offense. They do it a lot with him, and he's very willing to play that role to get these other guys open. And that's the thing about Devin. Like, people talked about just stat patter, just looter in a riot. I believe it was a conversation at one point. But, like, the dude cares so much about winning. And we're even seeing now, like, another part of it was the defense, where he was talked about, like, the worst defensive player in the league. And part of that was, I think, the defensive analytics, where he was on an absolute garbage team. Of course his defensive numbers are going to be bad. Also, defensive numbers hold no value to me, because you can't quantify good defense, because it's not all steals, blocks, rebounds.
90% of it is effort, which is why Patrick Beverley is still in the NBA.
Effort and intelligence and teamwork. It's defense is not an individual thing. And we're seeing now, he was better on defense in that game too than he was on offense. Booker could not throw it in the ocean in that game. He had 7 of their 9 turnovers. He just was in a bad place for whatever reason. Like, Pat Beverley got in his head, and he wasn't able to pull himself out of it. Although he did, again, he made the huge jumper down the stretch and then made the screen on that final place. But, like, he played good defense, and he has played really good defense throughout the playoffs.
He made the plays that matter. You know, I was telling my wife when we were watching the Bucks game, when Jrue Holiday was, like, 3 for 18, and then he hit 3 shots, and I was like, oh, he just justified all those picks that they traded for him. And she was like, well, he hasn't hit anything. And I was like, yeah, but he hit the ones that mattered. So, like, Devin Booker's, like, he's making the plays that matter.
Yeah.
Late in the games, which has been cool to see.
Yeah, and it's for the first time he's getting to do that, because he hasn't been in many games where it has mattered late throughout his career. And even then, we've seen the game winner over PG and Kawhi in the playoffs last year. He's got some other late game heroic plays. Like, he's been pretty good in those situations. He just hasn't had the opportunity to be in that situation very often. And now, on a consistent basis, he's on a team that has the lead or has a chance to take the lead down the stretch, and he's delivered in multiple ways.
Where did they draft Devin Booker? Like, what pick number?
13, one spot ahead of Cam Payne.
I remember that draft class. I wanted Devin Booker so bad, because we needed a shooter, like, as we still do now. We don't have any shooters.
Suns also got Frank Kaminsky out of that draft. So,
who are the players that are on James Jones' draft record? So Cam Johnson is on it. Jalen Smith, obviously, this year.
Yes.
Is Mikal Bridges on it?
No. Bridges was the last year of McDonough. And we don't know exactly kind of what impact he had at that point. Like, he was already being groomed for kind of step into this role at that point. But, yeah, he was part of the front office that made the Ayton and Bridges picks slash moves. But he was not in charge yet at that point. So he hasn't done a ton in the draft.
Cam Johnson was his first actual, like, he's the GM, this is the selection.
Yes.
And that was number 9, right?
Was it 11? He traded down, because they were at 6, I believe, and he traded down to somewhere, like I said, I think it was 11.
And he got murdered for that pick.
He did, by myself included.
Yeah. You hated Ayton, too, when he got picked.
because I knew Doncic was really good.
Yeah.
so did most of the people that actually paid attention. But yeah, and almost, again, we talked about the campaign move. All these little things he's made, whether big, small, yes, like he's been perfect for what they needed this year. You look at all the guys that signed for the whatever exception or whatever he signed on. Shout out to David Nash and Max McCauley. David does a newsletter for Suns fans. And occasionally we'll get back together with Max to do podcasts, who they used to have a podcast together. But they kind of ran through all the guys that signed for under that exception, and Jay's by far the best. You got guys like Derek Jones Jr. who couldn't even get on the court in the playoffs for Portland, and guys like that. And meanwhile, Jay's over here starting, and whether he's making shots or not, he's making a huge impact in there with his defense, with his toughness, moving the ball.
We talked about him a couple weeks ago when I had you on during the Lakers series. I was like, he just keeps getting passed around to teams, and they're keep being like, okay, this guy's really good, actually.
How about that pass?
It was perfect.
It was perfect. You could not have made that pass any better. It was so close to catching that backboard.
Okay, hold on. Because the Clippers players reacted this way. Clippers fans reacted this way. Their own team broadcast reacted this way. How does no one understand that that was a live ball? It's not. If they think that that is goaltending, then half of the alley-oop lobs that get thrown would be goaltending.
Well, even it's yeah, yes, yeah. It, I guess it shows that it is funny that Suns fans knew right away. Like I thought that was the type of play that they were going to have to try. With that little amount of time, it's like, yeah, you can technically get a catch and shoot off, but it's not going to be a real shot.
And you're in that coffin corner. So if you're giving it to a guy that's turning and facing the basket, he's going to be coming towards you. Yeah. So there's going to be a second defender right there already.
That is, and that's the part that complicated it, is where the pass was made from.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know if you could get it to where it needed to be there. But Suns 4 years ago under Jay Triano ran this play to Tyson Chandler to win a game. And at that's the first I'd ever seen it, heard of that rule. So that was like flashing through my mind as this was getting ready to happen. And then it played out perfect, and I just lost my mind. It was, I honestly mentioned, so I was in a group chat with a couple buddies, including Cole Huff, who is a Creighton alum that writes about the Clippers. He's been a Clippers fan his whole life. And I told him, I still can't believe that happened. Like, that stuff doesn't happen to me. And his response was, it happens to the Clippers. It was only a matter of time. came around later than usual. I was like, well, touche there.
Yeah, it does happen to the Clippers. Yeah, that was a great play. I would like to ask you about Ben Simmons. What do you do with Ben Simmons? Do you think he's still a productive, valuable offensive player?
Yeah, they just won took the number one seed with him in the East. He played so much worse in the playoffs than he ever had previously in the playoffs than he did during the regular season, and that is a significant issue that they have got to figure out. But what value are you going to get if you try to trade him coming off that postseason run and some of the comments they made about him?
So here's the problem. This is the thing that I wanted to ask you. So when the best player on the team throws his teammate under the bus, not only is it a bad look, but it also kills a little bit of his trade value. So Philly is in a spot where, because everybody is talking about CJ McCollum for Simmons, that's kind of the hot one. That's like the only one that kind of sort of makes sense. They're not going to get Damian Lillard. They're not going to be able to trade. This dude was now people quibble about who said no on which side, but James Harden for Ben Simmons was a deal that was discussed 6 months ago. That he's not even in that same stratosphere right now. So if you're making a trade, if Philly is making a trade, the team that is like bringing in Simmons is wanting it to be like, this dude is really low. We're going to buy low. We're going to try to rehabilitate some of his value. We're not going to give you much. People kept talking about Oklahoma City. I hate it. I don't want Ben Simmons. From Philly's side, they it can't be like we get a pick and a young player back. It needs to be like, because you have a 27-year-old Joel Embiid who would have been MVP if he didn't get hurt, sitting there like, well, what do I have now?
Yeah.
So, like, where exactly does Ben Simmons fit in a trade? If you want to change the team, why not just trade Joel Embiid?
Because you don't trade a top three player, top five player, wherever you want to put him in the league, especially coming off the year he had.
But you're kind of boxed in.
But they were also the number one seed, and they lost in a game seven to go to the conference finals. So it's not like this is a complete failure. They can't win games as currently constructed. They got to figure some things out to be able to get where they want to go. But it's not like they're so far off that they can't. It's impossible that they'll ever get there.
It does feel like they've hit their ceiling, though, because I don't care about regular season seeding, because the East was also weird.
East was also weird in the playoffs.
Like, they have now four playoff appearances and zero Eastern Conference Finals to show for it. That's kind of an issue.
Oh, for sure. And like they are in a really difficult spot. But I think just starting over is, after everything they went through to build this team, how is that going to be received by the fans if you trade Joel Embiid right now? And especially, well, like, the how much are they going to hate Ben Simmons if it felt like he's the reason, like, they weren't good enough because of him, and now he's the reason they traded away their best player and one of the best players in the league?
The haul that they would get for Embiid would be significantly greater than the haul that they would get for Ben Simmons, and it would allow them to remain competitive and or near the top of the Eastern Conference. Whereas
I guess it depends, like, how much of the draft compensation versus players, like, who's going to...
Well, if you're dealing Embiid, you immediately can start talking about, like, we'll give you Embiid for Bradley Beal and other stuff. Like, we'll give you Joel Embiid for Damian Lillard and other stuff. It's not like a, yeah, we'll give you Ben Simmons and other stuff for CJ McCollum.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to get other stuff back. And the Portland thing, tangent, Yusuf Nurkic is still there. Like, Ben Simmons' biggest problem is he has to play point guard and be a primary ball handler all the time.
I don't think so. That's the problem. That's what they set him up to be. That's what they told him he was. That's how they built their team, kind of. They didn't build around it well, but that's kind of how they set him up to be, when he doesn't have to be. Like, that's the problem. In that role, the ceiling is capped. Like, you got to find other ways, and he's got to get better. Like, it's not even, he doesn't have to come back and be a 40% pull-up three-point shooter next year. The free throw deal has to get
not
fixed.
Be a 15% three-point shooter. That's what he is for his career, well, 15%.
There are players
People
in the league.
People keep comparing him to Draymond Green because of the defensive prowess, the vision, whatever. Draymond is a 32% career three-point shooter. At his best, he was in the mid to high 30s, one of his peak seasons. And plus, Draymond would shoot it. Ben has shot 34 threes in his 4 years of playing. That's the problem. It's like, everybody says, well, oh, he can be Draymond Green. He could be this. He could be that. He could be a small ball five. Well, with Joel Embiid off the court this season, he averaged 7.2 rebounds a game. So he's not rebounding a ton. For his career, he's averaging 0.8 blocks a game. He's not a rim protector. So you're going to have him as a pick and roll guy who's just going to sit in the dunker spot, who can't go to the free throw line. You have to build your team such a specific way to have this guy on your roster. And for anybody to trade for him, they're either going to have to tweak or completely overhaul what they have. I just don't know what Philly does outside of, like, running it back next year.
And everybody thinks, oh, they have to trade Simmons, but I think it's more likely that they just run it back, hope that he makes some improvement, see if they can make a move kind of on the margins to tweak the construction a little bit to kind of balance things a little bit better. But yeah, at this point it's hard to see them getting all the way there, but I don't think, like, it's completely hopeless to the point where it's the best move, especially considering the fans and considering everything they've gone through. Like, it would be a really bad PR move to trade Joel Embiid. And again, even if you get, like, a Bradley Beal or whatever, coming off of this playoff run, I just don't think that's going to happen. I think, like, you make the point, yeah, you can get more for him. Well, that's because he's, again, a top five player in the league, and that's what you'd be trying to acquire with the moves that you're getting back for him with all the draft picks, again, that you'd conceivably get.
Is it, though? Phoenix is about to make, could make the finals without a top five player in the NBA.
Yeah, that's a pretty, that's
Miami,
hard to do.
Miami made the finals last year without a top five player in the NBA.
Yeah, that was weird.
I mean, still. Like the teams that have made the finals have been LeBron James and Steph Curry, so they've kind of skewed things a little bit over the last however many years. But like, we might have a finals this year without a top five player in the NBA in it.
Yeah,
Atlanta could make the finals. Think about that. It's not going to happen. It's not a likelihood, but it's a possibility that Atlanta could be in the finals.
With the way the East has gone this year, I almost think it is going to happen. Like, the East has been so weird. We felt like it was these top three teams and then everybody else. And each of these top three teams has shown such a massive flaw. Even Milwaukee still being alive. Obviously, Brooklyn's flaw was that two of their three players got hurt. Mm-hmm. But obviously, we're talking about all the flaws for Philly right now. Milwaukee barely scraped by in that series. And
they don't
still
have DiVincenzo.
Significant. Late game offensive questions, significant coaching decision lineup questions. Milwaukee got by, but that doesn't mean all their flaws are going to suddenly disappear. They didn't figure them out. They just managed to survive them against a team that was so banged up that they just didn't have quite enough firepower. And even then, if KD was half an inch backwards on that shot, it's over. And they're home right now. So.
Or if he wore a shoe size that was... yeah. Have you seen that story?
I have,
he wears a size bigger shoe in basketball than he does in real life. That would have been funny.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But the thing that further complicates it for Philly, and probably makes it a non-starter for a lot of teams, is Ben Simmons is still owed $140 million over the rest of his deal,
yeah.
Which is 3 or 4 years, I think. The last year of his deal, he'll be 28, and he'll be owed $40 million.
Yep.
If Ben was a $20 million player... we're having a completely different discussion.
Yep. So, and that's, again, also part of, man, Philly's just kind of trapped right now. And it's not the worst place to be in. It's not like they can't compete. Again, they're going to get a good seed every year. They're going to give themselves a chance to figure some things out in the playoffs and for the guys to get hot and that kind of stuff. But it is so hard to kind of see what's the big move that they can make that can fix their issues.
They were a victim.
Yeah, sorry. Just with Tobias Harris kind of locking themselves into that contract in addition to the Simmons and Embiid contract, and for him to be your third best player. And you kind of felt like, well, one, coming off of how well he played for the Clippers that year when they acquired him, and then two, you kind of felt like with his ability to shoot the ball, he was the kind of guy that you needed to play with Simmons and Embiid. And it just hasn't quite worked out on the court. He hasn't been able to be consistent enough to be the guy that they needed him to be.
They were kind of victims of like what Dallas is going through a little bit right now, where like Dallas began a rebuild and then got Luka, and then Luka like, was suddenly so good right away that they were like, okay, we have this urgency to make a bunch of moves around him. So like Philly, once Embiid was healthy and on the floor, he was so good right away. Yeah. And Simmons was exciting, and they're like, okay, we have to put all of these pieces around him. And then, like, the point of no return for them probably was letting Jimmy Butler walk to open cap space for Al Horford.
Yeah.
That was the big problem.
That's not good.
Because, like, all of the stuff that they have done since the process started, like, really the only people left are Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons.
Yep.
Like, everything else that they got from the process is all gone. They shipped it all out. You know who probably would have helped them? Landry Shamet. Maybe. Maybe he doesn't take the step back when he goes to the Clippers or whatever, because he was pretty good for them.
He was good for the Clippers and then got to Brooklyn and kind of forgot how to be a decent basketball player.
And if they don't make that trade, they don't have Tobias Harris's contract on the books.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Like I said, Dallas did the same thing. New Orleans kind of did the same thing. Phoenix did not. And obviously, Booker wasn't quite that level that early on, but they were patient through the rebuild. Part of that is because they kept screwing it up, but they waited until the right moment and put themselves in position to where they could go get Chris Paul. and then add a veteran like Jay Crowder with that, and then add the guards that they've added kind of on the fringe. All these guys are like, all right, we are now ready to make this move. And they found the perfect guy to allow them to make that leap. And it was difficult, obviously. And they Ryan McDonough screwed it up a lot before they eventually kind of figured it out. But it's so much of that timing, getting lucky, having the right options come available at the right time. And that just was not the case for Philly and for Dallas. And now they've got flawed rosters and their superstars are sitting at home because of it.
You're making me sit here and reconsider wanting to trade up in this year's draft, the Thunder. Maybe we should just stick with 6, 16, and 8. I was so pissed. The draft lottery last night. We had a 75% chance of at least one top 5 pick, and we get stuck with 6.
And this is where Presti's really going to have to work his magic here because, yeah, getting, and this is what we saw with McDonough too, getting the assets is one thing. Being able to use those assets to actually build a contending team is a lot more difficult than tearing it down.
This is the draft right here for us. And I told a buddy this last night, SGA's days in Oklahoma City are numbered right now. If we don't do something in this draft, I don't want Scotty Barnes. I want Jalen Suggs or Evan Mobley or Jalen Green or Cade Cunningham. We need one of those dudes. Because if not, Shea's days are numbered. And so we got to move up. Got to move up. Let's move on to Nebraska basketball so that people...
Good luck.
People that actually... Well, maybe we could sweet-talk Cleveland into doing something stupid.
Like I said, I just hope that nobody... Not you personally, but it'd be hilarious if just nobody trades with the Thunder and they have to make every single pick and they don't, and they like have to trade all the players because they need to make room for an entirely new roster of draft picks over the next 2 years.
I hope Devin Booker gets traded. I hope he asks for a trade.
I think we're good on that now.
I hope what happens is that LA does what it did the first two series and wins 4 straight games after dropping 2 and Devin Booker asks for a trade. I hope that's what happens. It's probably not what's going to happen because everybody keeps making a lot about how Ty Lue, like, yeah, he'll give you the first two games and then make all those adjustments. I mean, sure, that worked through the first two series, but you're also playing with fire. And in both of those series, like, Dallas had Kristaps Porzingis as his second best player, and Utah had a hurt Donovan Mitchell and a hurt Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert, who doesn't know how to play offense. So, like, the Phoenix Suns are an entirely different team to be like, yeah, we'll just spot you 2 games and then figure out what happens.
Especially because you get potentially have Chris Paul coming back who is not part of losing those first 2 games.
And they don't have Kawhi.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Which is like, so let's move, like I said, let's move to Nebraska basketball so people that regularly listen to this podcast can tune back in. You had a story on HailVarsity.com earlier this week from Fred Hoiberg's time at the Big Red Blitz tour, just talking about off-season skill development. And it's interesting, all of the returning guys that they have on this team, they've got some continuity now, which is not something that Fred has been able to enjoy through the first part of his Nebraska tenure. So what are they working on this off-season?
Yeah, and fundamentals, basic skill development, they're doing kind of piecing all that together. And that's kind of what Fred talked about a little bit, is, and he's talked consistently about how much time they lost last year because of the pandemic and how much development time, how much time to be able to fit those pieces together that they lost because they missed out on all those preseason practices and workouts and all that stuff. That is where basketball players get better, is the off season. During the year, it's all about maintaining, making a few tweaks here and there, but you make the leap in the off season. Specifically in the summer when you can really buckle down and really work hard, stay in the gym. They've got the certain amount of time they're allowed to be in there with the coaches, but players can go in there whenever they want, get the extra shots up and all that kind of stuff. So that's what he did not have last year. And now you're having that time that you missed out, plus you have the core coming back. So you're really focusing on... And the
he compared it to the Karate Kid.
He did. All the little chores that he made him do, and he's wondering, like, why are you making me do this? And then later on, it ended up showing that, well, actually, this was helping you get to this point. All of it came together to help you improve and get stronger and kind of learn the various techniques. So once he kind of made you realize, all right, they all come together, and now suddenly you're winning all your fights. So that's kind of where they're at right now, is because you look at it, probably the two biggest things, especially that irked Fred Hoiberg, was their shooting and their ball security. And those are things they're working really hard on: good decisions, good footwork, making the right pass. So that's part of that in the fundamental development, and just kind of building that up. And then obviously shooting. A lot of that was hoping for improvements because of the additions they made. But they're also getting in the gym with all these guys coming back and hoping to get more consistent with a guy like Lat Man, who obviously can shoot, but wasn't consistently what they needed him to be for the role he was playing. And a guy like Trey McGowan's, who made improvements as a shooter last year, but it wasn't high volume thing where he'd hit maybe one a game. So it's that's what they're doing right now, is they're really getting in there. They're pounding home the fundamentals. They're working on the shooting, the footwork, the finishing, the right decisions within the pick and roll, all that little stuff, so that once they get into their team stuff, all that stuff will be second nature, and they'll have hopefully improved to where they can actually execute the team stuff and make it work better than they did last year.
Let's talk about the shooting for a second. Now, they had a guy on the roster last year that played a significant role for them that could be best categorized as a chucker. So that's going to deflate your shooting percentages just a little bit.
Well, the problem is he was a lot better at it than everybody else on the team.
Yeah.
So he actually, he held them up.
You said Lat Man was not good enough as a shooter in the role that they needed him to be. Frankly, like, no one was.
Yeah, exactly.
So they shot 41.8% from the field overall, 277th in college basketball. They shot 33.3% from three, 189th. Fred is quoted. I'm just going to read this quote. "We do have more shooting. There's no doubt about that." This is Hoiberg talking at the Big Red Blitz Tour. "That's the biggest area we thought we needed to improve, and we feel we've made a big step and a big jump in that area. In the world of analytics that we live in now, you try to create as many shots in the restricted area right in front of the rim and the three-point line. So now 84% of our shots came in those two areas. Now I think we've got personnel where we can take advantage of that." He says, "We were number one, Alabama was number two in terms of shot percentage at the restricted in the restricted area at the rim and behind the three-point line. So we're getting the shots where we want them. Now we just need to increase our percentages, and we need to take much better care of the ball." So he touches on shooting better and turnovers, like you just pointed out. But he paints the shooting struggles last year in a light of, well, we got what we wanted, we just missed shots. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. And that was even the case in year one, where that was kind of one of the more impressive things that I thought, is Fred instantly, obviously he rebuilt the roster, but he had to get the guys that he could get within a month. So it wasn't like he had the perfect pieces to run what he wanted to do, but he right away had them playing the way that he wanted to. And even with guys like Deshaun Burke and Gervais Green, whose shot selection wasn't always the best, you look at their shot profile, and again, that year they were at the rim, they were a lot of threes, they just could not make either one. And last year was kind of same thing, where they were better in both areas, but not better enough to actually win a significant amount of games. So that's kind of where he's hoping the leap comes this year, when you add a guy like Bryce McGowan's, who can help you in both those areas. He's really crafty getting to the rim. He's got to get a little bit stronger to be able to finish, especially when he gets contact, but he can get wherever he wants on the court with his long strides and his moves. And then he can step out and shoot from 25 feet easily as well. So you had a guy like him, and then you add guys like C.J. Wilcher and Keon Edwards, who have been in college a little bit. They don't have a ton of experience, but Hoiberg believes in their ability to shoot, and they give you two different kind of options. Wilcher is kind of a bigger body, 6'4 guard. Edwards is 6'7, kind of a longer wing. You add a guy like Kisei Tominaga, who I watched on one of his games, where he's just like chucking it from wherever and making it. Like he
has a nickname, doesn't he?
Japanese Steph Curry.
Yes.
He made 11 threes in that game. You can go check the basketball tab at hillvarsity.com. I broke down that game. But he made 11 threes in a game this season. So best three-point shooter in junior college coming to Nebraska. Well, it'll be interesting to see kind of how Wilcher fits in the rotation, how Tominaga, what his role is, kind of with Kobe Webster coming back. I think all three of those guys, while different players physically, I think they all kind of give you some of the same things. And you got Hoiberg believes in a guy like Wilhelm Breidenbach as a shooter. His ability, I think he's got some work to there to be a consistent like volume type of shooter, but the touch is there. Like he's got the ability to step out and be a threat at 6'9", who can also put it on the deck and make a play for himself or others. So yeah, just they added a lot of pieces that shooting is one of their strengths based on what Hoiberg and his staff evaluated within the recruiting process.
How big of an impact can Bryce McGowan's have right away?
That's going to be the question. And I think so.
And so I guess by extension, how important are these next few weeks and then into, like you kind of broke down the offseason schedule for them, him just being in the gym, him being part of the strength program, they hired a new strength coach. How important are these next few weeks for him to be able to have an impact?
And it's funny, I'm wearing Viglianco Hoops t-shirt today, but and Bryce got hooked up, Bryce and Trey both got hooked up with Thomas Viglianco, who's one of the best skills trainers in the area. And I was talking to him a few weeks back and just kind of like he was talking about he was talking to Bryce about and what they were working on. And he went out and played at that the Iverson Classic All-Star game, and the practices, the scouts got to see that. We only got to see the game. He didn't play a ton. He knocked down a three during that stretch. One or two, I can't remember. But during the week, he did well for himself and showed some of the things that they're already working on his weaknesses that he needs to improve on to be able to make an instant impact in college. And Thomas helped him identify those right away. And that's the stuff that he's putting the time in addition to getting stronger, obviously, because that's going to be the one thing. Like you watch him play and he draws a lot of contact. He can't finish through it a lot. He was so thin in high school, and he's so long. It's kind of funny. You look at Trey versus Bryce. They're very different players, like physically. Like Trey is shorter, stockier, more explosive. Bryce is longer, taller, is more smooth than he is terribly explosive. These guys are super tight brothers, but with very different kind of physical profiles. So it'll be interesting to see those two play together. But Bryce has a chance to come in and I don't know about 20 points a game. I don't know that he's a one and done, but he's got a chance to come in and be a starter and be an impact double-digit scorer right away with the skill set that he has right now.
That would certainly help their bottom line. You've got a line in your piece where you say, will the work they've done and are doing this offseason be enough for the Huskers to vault themselves out of the Big Ten cellar? And then you've got a quote from Hoiberg where he shares a story with John Beilein. He said when he got into the league, Beilein, there were 10 teams and six of them were going through rebuilds. And then Beilein told Hoiberg, you come into the league and there's 14 teams and you're the only one rebuilding. So like Hoiberg has said, he said in this quote, and he said at other times that this is the best conference of basketball. Can they be competitive? Do you think they can be competitive? Do they feel like they can be competitive?
And that's, I think just kind of the conference and what they experienced last year is why Hoiberg was kind of hesitant, and just in general, it's good practice, but hesitant to give any kind of real definitive answer there because,
wait,
we don't know yet.
You mean it's not good practice to say get us now because you won't get us later? I'm sorry.
I'll just leave that there.
I'm sorry.
But
I loved that quote. By
yeah.
The
way. Oh boy.
Not passing judgment.
Anyway, because last year they did make a significant step forward, I thought, mm-hmm. in terms of the personnel, in terms of the way they played last year, and they won the same number of games. And obviously they played fewer and all that stuff or whatever, but they struggled just as much in the Big Ten Conference to actually win games as the year previously. And they were in a lot of games. They just weren't able to finish them off. I don't know how many of those games are lost in the last 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 30 seconds. So that, I think, points to the talent level and the ability to execute in those stretch situations. But just in terms of, I don't know how good a lot of these guys, these newcomers are going to be, and we don't know what kind of leap the guys coming back will make. And Delino Banton, I guess, is still a question. He was at the G League elite camp this week. He's still currently going through the draft process. We'll know within the next week or so what his final decision is. But they've definitely got the pieces, I think, if guys click, if things work out, if a few of these newcomers are able to make an impact right away, if Bryce is able to shoot mid-30s from three and score double digits, if Trey is a little bit more sound in his decision-making, a little bit more consistent coming back here, if Lat can shoot 38-39% from three instead of 35, if they can make slight improvements, and then also they're going to get a full season of Derek Walker and a full season of Eduardo Andre, who has added 20 pounds to his frame already and maintained the mobility there. He was the one guy that...
That's a big deal.
Yeah, he was the one guy that Hoiberg really mentioned, like, by name, talking about the leap that he's already made. And Kent Pavelka kind of praised him as well. So you're going to be stronger at the five. You're going to have more options on the perimeter, whether it's shooters or playmakers like a Bryce. And we'll kind of see what Keon Edwards can bring. That's a question. We still don't know how good these guys are going to be next year in the Big Ten, but just in terms of looking at the roster construction, it's so much better. That last year was better in year one, and this is better than year two. So they're getting closer to where they need to be. It's just these guys got to go out and prove that, hey, we're actually capable of getting this done and finishing these games.
You mentioned Banton. He did not get a combine invite, but he also did not hire an agent, so there's the potential for him to return to Nebraska if he decides to pull out of the NBA draft. What are your thoughts on that situation? What do you think he should do?
Yeah, so he didn't get an invitation to either of the camps. So the way it's structured now is they came up with this G League Elite camp that basically feeds into the NBA Combine in Chicago, where you bring another however many guys to go through some testing, to go through a couple scrimmages in front of scouts. And then the people there will cast votes to see, all right, who were the best, most impressive, most interesting guys at this camp to get the call up to stay in Chicago and go through the regular combine process. And so Banton wasn't originally even going to go to that, but Dijon Giroux from Houston, I believe, dropped out, and Banton was the alternate, I guess. So he stepped in, got in there, and he definitely, I think, turned some heads. Just it probably was like just quintessential Delino Banton. He was he really impressed people with his ability to make passes and rebound at his height as a 6'9", kind of a point guard type player with really good feel. And he 21 rebounds in two games. Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, I got the numbers right here. So in two scrimmages, he had 8 points on 4 of 13 shooting, 0-6 from three, 21 rebounds, 9 assists, just 2 turnovers and 2 blocks in 41 minutes. So he rebounded the ball. He made plays for others and took care of the ball. Got a couple blocks in there in the second game. He just could not hit a jumper. And that's going to be the question for him. And so I think what we saw here is probably kind of pre-COVID shutdown Delino Banton, where he was doing he had a really unique statistical profile. Aaron Henry, I think, when I ran the numbers, was the only guy that had anywhere close to the impact in so many different categories as Banton did at that point. And so he had scouts, I think, interested. And then the second half of the season happened, and he just was a shell of himself coming off of a letdown. And that's one thing that it was hard to evaluate basketball last year. You never know how different guys are going to react to getting COVID and missing time and all that kind of stuff. And he, whatever reason, he just could not get the flow going again in the second half of the season. So it seemed like he was kind of recharged going through this deal, and he did well for himself, but I don't think he answered the biggest question. So, and he did not end up getting, I thought some people thought that he could have gotten the combine call up, but he was not one of the ones that advanced to the combine. So now that kind of leaves him where he can try to get another workout to interview here and there or whatever. But he's got about a week or so here. It's 10 days after the end of the combine. So July 7th is the deadline for guys to withdraw and maintain college eligibility. So in the next 2 weeks, we should know what his decision is. I just don't know that he answered the questions well enough. Like, the jump shot has to improve. And we spent however long talking about Ben Simmons and kind of limitations that creates for him. Banton is a skinnier, less athletic version of Ben Simmons, basically. So he's still got some skill development that if he can show the ability to step out, he doesn't have to shoot 40% from three, be a threat to hit a shot, tighten up the handles just a little bit so that he can create better in the half court. So I think he really could benefit from coming back. And the quote he gave about working with Fred Hoiberg to Hoops Hypes, Brian Kalbrowski, I'll go ahead and read it. "Everything he says, I soak it up like a sponge. I know where he's coming from. He has played, and so it's easy for me to understand him because he's been in my shoes as well. He gives me advice on everything. I can call him a friend, a coach, as a brother. On the court, he put me in places he feels I can do well. He was an NBA coach, so he knows what it's like and how it is, and so he puts me in positions where I can shine and show that I'm an NBA player. I'm not taking his experience for granted." So that right there, one, blast that to every recruit that you're currently talking to.
Yeah.
That's, I think, as good of a selling point for Fred Hoiberg as you're going to get. But that does kind of point to how much he does value the work. And he mentioned he's still working with Hoiberg on continuing to improve the jump shot within that interview. So I feel like he could definitely, like, I think people, a lot of times people say, oh, go back to school and improve your stock. And a lot of time, I just don't think that's realistic, especially for guys that are older, that have been in college for a while. When it's specific skill things like here with Banton, and it's possible he can take a, he can bet on himself and teams will be intrigued by the other stuff to get him into their program, whether it's on a two-way or what the deal is, and believe that they can make that skill improvement.
He is the exact kind of player the Thunder draft and say, hey, we can teach him how to shoot.
Yes, exactly. So that's still, I think that's kind of what he's weighing. It's like, all right, what can I improve myself? Am I better off taking the risk now, hoping that I get a deal somewhere and being able to spend all my time on this? Or am I better off going back to school, putting in the work with Hoiberg, and then potentially guaranteeing my, or setting myself up for more guaranteed money the following year if he can make that improvement? But
you would classify Banton as a hard worker, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Somebody that wants to improve in the areas that where his game is maybe lacking.
Yes.
That's probably the biggest difference between him and the comp that we were just talking about. Ben Simmons is shooting with the wrong hand.
Yeah.
People keep telling him to shoot with the different with a different hand, and he's not doing it. So, like, some of it is, you know, how much are you willing to work at the thing that you're not maybe the best at?
Yeah.
So we'll see. Do you think he comes back? And if he does, do you think he suddenly is back into a starting role?
So if he's coming back, I definitely think they'll plug him in. And starting five will probably be Trey, Delino, Bryce, Latt, and Derek Walker to open the year. And it'll be interesting to see kind of how Hoiberg manages the kind of the point guard role duties there, because Trey talked, like, mentioned how he felt like over the down the stretch of the season, he was able to really settle into that role, and that's what he came here to play. Delano also sees himself as a point guard, so you can play multiple point guards together, but kind of how does that work out and keep both guys happy? So that is kind of an interesting plot line, but you never know. I think I'm still leaning towards him coming back. I just don't know that he did quite enough to make the leap, but I think he helped himself without answering the biggest questions around him this week is kind of how I'd characterize it.
That's fair. Well, Jacob, you got to go. You got a podcast for, of your own that you have to record. So thank you
for
coming on.
Actually, we got pushed back a day because Damon has CWS duties now. So shout out to Damon for getting picked up. He doesn't matter sport. Dude knows his stuff. So
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still going to kick you off the podcast. We're going to end it here.
All right, fine.
Even though you don't have to go. thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you to Cam for producing. Thank you to all of you guys for listening every week. Remember to subscribe, leave a 5-star review, leave a comment or whatever. If you leave a 1-star review, or I think you can leave no stars. I think you can do that. It'd be hurtful if you did.
Don't do that.
I will, as always, send clips of the Scott's Tots episode of The Office direct into your inbox. Nobody wants that. Subscribe. Keep reading HailVarsity.com. Look out for the yearbook that's coming soon. We'll talk to you guys next week.
A Kodat Media Production.